live in fake outer space called Zoom. Zoom, Zoom. Okay, we have to do a lot. We have to finish the Mishnah for Perek tomorrow. Mishnah Tet and Perek Hey. Shiva Dvarim Begolem. There are seven traits which characterize a golem. A golem, anyone ever been to Prague before? Like Machach Baharat or something? So if you go to Prague, so these like Czechoslovakian peasants sell these like little action figure blobs, which they'll call a golem. The golem was based on this idea that the Maharal in Prague created this golem. The golem is like this monster man thingy. And that's just called a golem. But a golem, so if you go to Prague and you say golem, it'll be like, oh, Rabbi Luria, there. That's not how they speak in Prague, but whatever. So they speak in like Chinatown. But they try to sell these like little blob, like monster, whatever. That's a golem. But a golem also means someone who's very like unlearned, unrefined, very rough. Just like the golem of the Mara was like, he wasn't really a person. He was like this created like thing that wasn't really like a refined person. So the seven character traits of a uncultivated person, as this translates it. And on the flip side, there's seven character traits which you can identify a chacham with. Thank you. So we're not going to really go into them because it's just like seven pieces of advice of seven things you should avoid and seven things you should do if you want to be wise. So Chacham first is going to listen what the Chacham does. Chacham inu medaber v'nei misha gadol mimenu b'chachma. So a Chacham doesn't begin speaking before one who is greater in wisdom than he is, over minyan, or if he's older than him. Meaning he respects, he doesn't jump the gun, he respects the other person. Let me be able to learn from the other person. And if his friend is speaking, he doesn't jump in the middle of the conversation. And he doesn't answer like suddenly. He asks like good questions and he gives good answers. And he says first things first that he's going to talk about. He gives a list of things he's going to talk about. He talks about the things he mentions first and then the latter things later. And things he's never heard of or he doesn't know. So he says, I don't know. And he admits to the truth and with a golem, it's all the opposite character traits. Okay, a few important things here which mamish are important to know in our like interpersonal relationships. One is that don't think you know it all. Someone else who's older than you, who is wiser than you, don't think you have to know it all. You can like humble yourself a little bit to learn from people and give them the opportunity to speak first. There's a reason that we have two ears and one mouth, which represents I mentioned this before, I think the percentage of how much talking we should be doing, how much listening we should be doing. Someone who's wise, I learned this in a fundraising class from in grad school. I was undergrad, but I took this grad school class because the professor was really good. If you find the professor just like a piece of advice for going to college, if you find a professor you really like and you really enjoy learning from him, so, and let's say he's teaching like a grad class and you're undergrad, so like approach him and ask him if you can join the grad class. A lot of times, if it's a good professor, he'll let you join. Because his main thing is he loves teaching, he wants to share the information, and he'll be able to you know, and that's his ichor thing. So then he doesn't care that you're like a freshman. It's usually a freshman you're not going to get away with it. Sophomore, maybe. Junior and senior, definitely. Or more likely. But if you have the opportunity, you find the professor you really like, so like do it. Just try to do whatever you can with him if you really like it and you learn more with him. I did that in Brandeis with this guy who I'm quoting now, Professor Mirsky. He was teaching a graduate class. And then I did it when I was in Azrieli. So I was like doing a graduate degree, but I jumped along the But a master's, I'm so confused. Grad school, these guys were doing like whatever the next level up. They were like all principals, basically were in the class doing a doctorate. That's what it is. So I joined like one or two doctorate classes to follow this professor around. And it was very well worth it, especially and it's great in the doctorate class. They don't have to do like any work. They don't have like stupid homework. They have like big reports and projects, which like he knocked down for me because like I'm not a principal of a school or like an assistant principal or like an administrator at a school. So it worked out well. So that's just a piece of advice for everyone going to college and try to take advantage of those relationships that you have. Okay, so this fundraising guru who I took a graduate program a class with, so he said, like, if you want to have a good chance to say you're meeting with a potential donor, so he said the soda is not to try to sell yourself and pitch and talk the whole time, but is let the other guy speak, hear what he has to say, and then you'll learn a lot about him, what he cares about, what sparks his interest, and then you take that and use that and put that in the file in the account. And then another time you can like whip that out and impress him and say like, you know, would you consider donating to this project? So if you didn't have, you know, the reconnaissance that you had prior to this meeting, so would you say, okay, this guy is interested, let's just say, in Jewish education. So would you be interested in giving $1 million towards my Jewish education program? So that's nice because you know the guy's into Jewish education, but you don't recognize that he only cares about a certain segment of Jewish education, that of teaching, let's say, Ethiopian immigrants between the ages of 9 and 15, and you're trying to raise $1 million for a Shana Aleph program of white American, 18 to 19 year olds. So it's like totally off. Yes, you got the big picture of Jewish education, but since you're talking so much about your program in Jewish education, so you didn't really learn anything about the guy because you're busy talking. But if you listen twice as much as you talk, so you'll learn a lot more about the guy. And the same is with our interpersonal relations, is that you can learn a lot from just hearing another person speak, even if you're not speaking. And again, we learned many times the Mishnah, the different Mishnahs about the chashivos of silence and the chashivos of, the best thing for the body is shtika and letting other people talk and not opening up your mouth, because you can really, A, protect yourself from being a fool and saying something stupid. B, you open your mouth and you think you know what you're talking about and you really don't. And like C, like this way you can learn from other people and gain knowledge, so you'll grow a lot that way. So all important things, especially as you go off into it, you know, whatever the rest of your lives are going to be in your careers and stuff, do that. And there's another important thing, just the last, towards the end of the Mishnah, if a person should admit that he doesn't know something. This is like a number one like rule in like being a parent or being a teacher, is if your student asks you something or your child asks you something you don't know, don't try to like make up the answer. Because they'll see right through you. Kids are really, really sharp. They'll see right through you and know that you're like making it up and you're lying. And then they like lose their trust in you. And they're like, oh, you know, Rabbi Wittenberg just makes stuff up. He says he knows stuff, but he doesn't. Admit that you don't know. And that will go a much, much longer way. And it will impress people. Oh, this guy's humble. This guy doesn't think he knows everything. And it will go a very long way and make an impact on your students. And then your job is, your homework is, when your student asks you a question, you don't know, to go home and to look up the information at night and try to research it. And that's the way you're going to learn, as opposed to making up some answers. So also very important, Mida, as parents, or if you're going to go into teaching or any profession, say you don't know. I think, I probably did this in plumbing once. My boss asked, do you like understand what to do? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh, shoot, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. And it's like, oh, you're Vezmir. And it's like, then you start dabbling like crazy because you're an idiot. So don't do that. Just say, I'm not sure. Can you explain it another time what my job is, as opposed to like doing everything the wrong way and like assuming that I know. So important you sow for life, for being a parent, for being being in a profession, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, Mishnah, you have Barakay, Mishnah, you have Shiva, Gufei Avera. Seven types of punishment come to the world for seven types of sin. Miksasim Masrim, Miksasim In Masrim. There's some people give Maaser, give tithes, and some people don't. Rav Shal Betzoras Ba, famine comes due to lack of rain, because of that. Miksasim Rebim, Miksasim Sabein. And from that, some people have what to eat and some people don't have anything to eat. Some people go hungry, some people are not. But if nobody gives Meiser, so then it's a much, much greater famine and drought, and it's really, really bad for everyone. In a different form is if you don't take challah when you make enough pita dough, unlike what I did last night, so then a famine caused by drought ensues. So all different things that happen, different levels of drought, famine, that is caused by a lack of fulfillment of these specific mitzvahs. So again, so tithing, and also separating challah, which is also a form of tithe. Dever bali olam, pestilence comes to the world. Okay, this is a little bit in Yoni de Yoma of, I think we would define corona as dever. So dever bali olam, amitos ha'amuros b'tor shalom nesuru based. And why does pestilence come to the world? It's because there are death penalties prescribed by the Torah, which the Beis Din did not carry out appropriately. Meaning, really, they were supposed to paskin that this person was supposed to die. And for whatever reason, they didn't paskin that way. So because of that, that's one reason Dever comes. Another reason is about Peros Shvius, because of Peros Shvius. What's Peros Shvius?
Shemitah?
Right, Shemitah year. When's the next Shemitah year? Anyone know? Tav Shin Pei Bet. We're in Tav Shin Pei. I remember we're in Tav Shin Pei. Teishnat Pandemic. Okay. Pei sounds like a P, pandemic. Whatever, it's my mnemonic. How you remember that Tav Shin Pei happened. COVID was in Tav Shin Pei. And then Tav Shin Pei Bet is going to be the next Shemitah Mirat Hashem. So what does it mean that the court didn't give the death penalty? Rashi explains that if the court didn't do what the Ratzon Hashem was, meaning to follow the halacha that this person dies, so since they let them off, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send his other servants to administer this guy's punishment, which is death. So that's why Dever comes, because it has to clean up the, you know, finish off, what's the lashon of the what are those guys called that kill people? An assassin. I had to finish up the mess which wasn't done or something like that. I'm sure there's some line in some movie like that with assassins. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Have to clean up your mess and like kill the guy. So that's the mashal for Dever, is that, you know, the Beis Din didn't do it, so now Hashem has to send his other assassins to take care of the job. Rabbeinu Yonah says a different approach, that it's not the Beis Din's fault. It's just there's certain transgressions deserve death, and some death is bidei shemayim. So there's certain mitos bidei shemayim. So how can a court administer a heavenly death sentence? Like only the heaven can do it. Or kares, for example. There are many, many, many averos, or if a person doesn't do, so you get kares for it. And a Beis Din can't do that. What's kares? So there are different opinions, but one opinion is that a person dies early. He's cut off. Kares means cut off. He's cut off early. His life is cut off early. So Kadosh Baruch Hu sent a dever to end his life early. Again, it's not for us to judge about what's going on in the world, if it's because of the Beis Din or not. But this is says something scary. So, and now what about Peros Shvius? Why is, I understand though that explanation of Rabbeinu Yonah is great. Certain things the Beis Din can't do, or the Beis Din, even Rashi, the Beis Din messed up. They didn't prescribe the guy was really chayav to die, and he didn't. So now Hashem says Dever to take care of him, or that there are certain misos that the Beis Din can't do. It's midei shemayim, so Hashem says Dever. But what about Peros Shvius? What's wrong with Peros Shvius? So so a pshat level is that during Shnas HaShemitah, so a person isn't allowed to work their field. You can't do anything They can't work their field. They can't plow their field. They can't water their field. They can't do anything proactively to the field. I went with a field trip, no pun intended, with my kids out today, and we went and saw the beautiful fields around Eretz Yisrael, and we saw farmers harvesting the wheat with their combines to bring the Korban Omer tonight. It was very, very inspiring. Baruch Hashem, seeing this happen in Eretz Yisrael. Seriously, I'll send you pictures. Now I'm harvesting the wheat for the Korban Omer to bring in the Beis Hamikdash, Bezrat Hashem, tonight. And so what's Perish Shvi? So during the Shemitah year, so all the fields are Hefker. Whatever grows is for anyone to come and take. No worries. And let's say, and that those fruit and vegetables have a certain level of sanctity of Kedusha. It has to be treated that way. It's kind of cool. You can have a very holy, holy orange, a holy apple that grows in Eretz Yisrael, which you don't get in Chutz Lars. So the reason that you have to be mafkir everything is I mean, there are a few reasons, but one pashup shot is HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's to remind us that everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you work 6 years, then take off the seventh year. The pasuk says, Li ha'aretz, the land is mine. So the one to teach a lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns everything that we have is ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and our source of livelihood is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And another reason practically is, since farmers can't farm their crops and take care of their fields, so they're not able to give trumos and maestros, which was a form of sustenance for the Levim and Aniyim who lived during the times, during those times. So therefore, this guy is not allowing the Levim and the Aniyim to come and take up his field, and he's essentially cutting them off from their ability to survive and have sustenance from food. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Mida Kenega Mida, you're cutting those people off by not allowing them to take fruit and vegetables from your field because you weren't mafkir them. So too, I'm going to cut you off early, and you're not going to have what to survive either, and that's why Deborah comes. So that's one shot. And it also undermines the essence of the world. The essence of the mitzvah of Shemitah is to have bitachon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides. And that's why Chazal referred to farmers who keep Shemitah as gibore koch, that they're strong, you know, the strongest of the strong. Why? Because like Hashem says, like, work your field for 6 years, don't work the seventh year, and I'm going to take care of you. Can you imagine a farmer is like, don't go to your store. If you had a grocery store, like, just close it for a year. But it's even more for a farmer because he's closing it for more than a year. Because he's closing it for the seventh year, and he's also closing it for the eighth year. Because the eighth year's produce was planted in the end of the seventh year's produce. So then he's off seven in the eighth year, and then everything's backlogged. So imagine if I told you, like, you know, don't go to work for the next year. And then the next year after that, you'll be just making up from all the business which was lost. And you're not going to make anything then because you have to plow and it represents a person's bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to take care of everything. He's going to take care of everything. And if a person says, no, I'm going to work my field, so it's undermining the essence of the whole mitzvah, the essence of being a person in this world, is to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of everything. And he runs everything. Just like he made my fields grow for 6 years, so he's going to give me a special bracha in the sixth year that will be good for the sixth, seventh, and eighth year. Because the sixth year has to be fruit for him for the sixth year, and also has to provide for the seventh year and the eighth year, because he's not going to have food for the eighth from the seventh. So it's undermining the whole essence of the mitzvah and the whole essence of our existence in this world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. And it's not kochi v'otzem yadi, it's not the strength of my hand that gets me success. It's ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha. Yes, we have to do our ishtados. We have to recognize that it's 100% ishtados and 100% siyat d'shmaya. Our ishtados is just a way it needs a pipe to come down, the shefa from Shemayim to come down. So our ishtados builds that pipe and then Hashem sends it down, but it's coming all from Shemayim. So if we don't observe Shemitah, so then we're undermining like the whole purpose of the world and what Hashem is doing. And just another interesting shot that I saw from Rav Aryeh Levine, which is a little scary. He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created that, like, embedded in nature is that a person works the land for 6 years And again, like embedded in nature is that a Jew lives in Eretz Yisrael. Just like a fish is like its nature that a fish lives in water. So like a Jew is supposed to live in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not giving you a Zionistic rah-rah speech now. I'm just telling you the Metzius. Like everyone's outside of Eretz Yisrael is in Gullus. Why were we sent to Gullus way back when? Because of our many sins and we're exiled from the land of Israel. And every Jew who's outside the land of Israel, and every base medrash and every shul and every yeshiva and every Jewish everything is really a b'di'evit. Really, a Jew is supposed to live in Eretz Yisrael, and mitzvah Hashem that will happen soon, that everyone will be here. But really, that's a b'di'evit. So embedded in nature of Aryeh Levine, Zatzal says, is that 6 years you work the field, again, in Eretz Yisrael, and the seventh year you rest and you mafkir everything. That is the natural order that exists in the world. And if the natural order has existed in the world, so then the rest of the natural order is also in place. And the rest of that is that Hashem sochal yad minecha, that Hashem protects us. Hashem protects us. And part of that Hashem protecting us is that people are not hefker to the Malach HaMavos. So the Malach HaMavos can only be sent on a mission to take someone out. And the lashon of, since we're using the lashon of an assassin, so to speak, the Malach HaMavos also is natural orders that he's only allowed to go and take someone out if he's given that job, that mission by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the natural order, the way of how things work. So if we ruin the natural order by not observing the seventh year of Shemitah, which the land has to rest, so then the rest of the order, the natural order, so to speak, also breaks down. And then the Malach HaMavos, Rachman Letzlan, is given full reign to go out and do whatever he wants. And he can take who he wants. And it's scary, and it's first of all, it's a frightening thought, and it's also scary because we're like living in the times of this, of this Dever, where you see the Malach HaMavos taking like Gedolei Yisrael and such good people. They didn't do anything wrong at all. Not that anyone does anything wrong, but such like Sadiqim and Gedolei Yisrael who were taken from us due to this COVID. And he's like, you're like, what did they do? Why did they deserve it? The natural order has been broken. The Malach HaMavos just goes, and so scary things. We should be zocha that this should end very soon. The natural order should return, and Bezrat Hashem, everyone should be healthy. So that's why Dever comes, because of Shemitah. Because according to Rav Aryeh Levine Zatzal, is that this natural order of protection, of doing nature's will, of resting on the seventh year, is not there. So too is the Malach HaMavos free reign. Okay, so that's Dafka Peres Shviz. I have another word also on Shviz. Let's go on. Should I tell you? Okay, it's a good word. I heard today from Rabbi Rudinsky. You ever hear Rabbi Rudinsky? Big Talmud Chacham in Muncie. Anyone can guess what's in here? I got a free lafa next time you come here. Anyone?
Cottage cheese.
Cottage cheese, good. No, that's this one. Next, anyone else? Come on.
Soup.
Okay, that's a good one. I have gone on bike riding before with soup in my water bottle. That's good.
Is it soda?
No, that's too obvious. Not done. See? Come on, just take a guess.
Water.
Matan?
Seltzer.
She was right. Plain old water. You guys got to be careful. You got to be careful. You got to listen. Be careful. Don't fall for the tricks. Gotcha. Effie, are you in a closet? Where are you? You're muted.
That's our toilet paper stash, during the coronavirus. No, we've had it before.
I hope when this whole corona thing's over, people will naturally they're just gonna be mouthing words as opposed to speaking because they forget to unmute themselves. You think that could happen?
100%, yeah.
when people have you ever seen people randomly with a little book or a sitter swiping? No one's ever witnessed this before? I've seen this before. It's a busha and a chirpa. Like, in shul, like, a guy just with a sitter, like, he doesn't even realize. So, like, if this goes on long enough, like, people are going to be, it'll be great. I'm trying to teach my kids to do it. It's just not working. They don't get technology so well yet. Anyways. All right, so just water. Thank you. Okay, Chara Bali Olam, a sword of war comes to the world. Al Inoy Adin Val Ivus Adin, for the delay of justice, for perverting judges, justice. Val Morim Batar Shaloka Lacha, those who paskin, not according to Lacha. Chara Bali Olam. Again, you think, what do these things have to do? But, like, you know, like the Tisha B'Av videos, like the videos that, like, people make just to, like, make it really, like, sad and depressing, and how you have to relate to the world. So it goes through, like, an atomic Tokef and shows how each one of these things are happening, like a wild bear attacks man in Nebraska, and person drowns, and like stabbing is in Israel. So again, all these Mishnayos are, yes, we need to like think like, oh, what does this have to do with anything? It's like post-corona, like maybe the world will wake up. So also all these things happen also. Chai Rabba Le'olam El Shavuz Shav V'El Chil Hashem. Wild beasts come to the world because of false swears and make a Chil Hashem. Galus Ba Le'olam. Exile comes to the world because of Bodhisattva, Gilai Rayos, and Shmichos Damin, Val Shmita's Arth. Also, again, Shmitah. Again, Shmitah, excuse me, is a very important one. I have to tell you that word from Rabbi Dinsky now. I think my friend Yoni Miller Shlita for sending me this year, that he says that Shmitah is every, he quoted the Chida of why is it that every seventh year you have a year off. So he says, the Gemara says that it used to be that people used to learn all year round, and then two months out of the year, people used to take off, the Gemara in Bracha says, in order to work the fields to make a parnasa. That was in Chodesh Tishrei Nisan, I believe. So if you do the math, so that means every year a person was learning 10 months, and he took off two months to work. That's how what they had to do back then. So that means every 6 years they accumulated 12 months off of learning. So they took off. Hashem said, okay, you take a year off to make up a sabbatical, to make up those 12 months that you missed in the past 6 years since you had to go work. So you'll have 12 months to make that up. So that's a chidas pshat. Very, very beautiful. And Mamish is an amazing thing. Each Shemitah, there's more and more people who join on to Mamish, like stopping and working their land, even non-religious farmers. Yes, there is like a heter mechira, similar to like how we sell our chametz to goy. So certain people sell their farms to a goy, which is, according to some, is problematic. To others, it's fine. Many people do it here. But more and more people each Shemitah cycle join on to taking a year off. And they open up kolels where farmers go and they sit and learn for the whole year, or do other things. So that means every seventh year there is 12 months of learning to be made up, and that's why they take the year off in order to learn. So Rudinsky says, is like, there has to be something deeper here, because like once time is lost, you can't make it up. Yes, technically they're making up the 12 months which were lost, but those 12 months were gone like already, and now they're like paving way for, you know, they have 12 new months of learning. So it can't be that. He says, what's a deeper reason? He's like, because you cannot compare 12 months of learning when it's broken up over the course of 6 years versus 12 months straight of learning, doing it in succession. You cannot compare learning on Zoom versus being in yeshiva and learning straight. And you cannot compare doing anything in life when it's uninterrupted. Try reading a book without looking at your phone. Try learning without picking up your phone once. Try having a conversation with your friends or your family and hanging out with them without picking up your phone once. So first, it might be like very weird and uncomfortable for you, but if you do it long enough, so then you realize like, wow, I was totally not invested in that experience with my friends or with my family, or totally not invested in whatever it is I was doing. I'll give you an example. They did a study where they took two sets of people and sent them on a vacation. One set of people they sent with their phones, the other set didn't have phones. And then a year later, 6 months later, and then a year later, they quizzed them of what they saw on their vacation. So the people who didn't have any pictures to take and didn't have any pictures to look at afterwards, they remembered about 90% of what they saw. The people who had phones, who had pictures to look at afterwards, they remembered like 15% of what they saw. And the reason is that our phones distract us from what we're doing. We can't have full attention on something when we're distracted by a ding, when we're distracted by this, when we're distracted by just holding in our hands, just having a cell phone out. Studies have shown even having a cell phone out, upside down, on the table, shut off, and everyone knows that, it still causes people to distract them. And we can do it, we'll do a thing where, like, you see this truck, but how much is it distracting you versus, I shouldn't have told you I'm doing this, but what is more distracting? If I'm just holding this here and talking, holding my phone, so you say, oh, no, the truck, but naturally, even I'm even being more distracted by this. Like, when I was holding this truck puzzle piece, so I'm like, I recognize it, and I said, I'm like, okay, it's a puzzle piece. But when I held this, I'm like, even though it's off, I'm like waiting, when is it going to, and I'm like watching myself now. It's like, wait, when is it going to, like, when can I check the next thing? When is it going to ding? When am I going to get, like, whatever it is? When am I going to send out? And that's what that does. As psychologists have, researchers have turned it, is that the generation we're in now is continual partial attention. Okay, is that no one has full attention anymore, and that's why that study is like so fascinating about people who don't have phones. I'm trying to make a movement that not have phones on TULM. They, oh no, I need pictures, Rabbi. And I was like, they need to actually remember the TULM, remember what you did, and like, and it would take it in. Like, yes, when I go places with my kids, I take out my phone and like we take pictures and stuff, but I try to tell them, take mental pictures also, or we like pretend we're taking pictures, like, you know, like, you guys ever know like the disposable, you guys know what a disposable camera is? You have to wind it up. How do you know about that? Well, they had it at your, how do you know about that?
People still use them, but now it's like artsy and like ahead of the curve. It's like,
classic. That's why I don't change my like my clothes. Like, I just wear them for like, because eventually it's going to come back in style. It's like my uncle has like a picture of his father and his glasses from 1930, and like he has the same pair, and he's like, you know, the hippest, like coolest grandpa on the block, and he's like, no one knows that it was his, like, you know, his dad's like glasses from 1930. But yeah, the same thing with clothes. Like, now it's like this totally like ugly and gross and out of style, but like, give it like 5 years, you know, and like my torn jeans, which like I've just like overworn, like I still wear them because it's styling to wear torn clothing that you buy from a store. Torn clothing? What the heck's the matter in the world? Who goes to a store to buy torn clothing? Bonus oil, what's the world coming to? Out of whack. Everything, you stop and just think. Don't even realize, like, I'm going to the store, I'm paying $100 to buy a torn piece of cloth. Like, what the heck? You know, like, oh, it's to sensitize us to the homeless people who have holes in their clothing. Shut up. You know, so wear your clothes for more than like a season and like save the money and send them to the homeless guy so he can buy new clothes. But yeah, I still wear my bar mitzvah suit. Because eventually it's going to come back in style. What's the point of wasting all my money on? Listen, if people like clothes, they're allowed to buy new clothes. I buy new clothes also. It's like it. Have to like keep up with the seasons and you know what some like you know homosexual guy in Italy decides is the new style, so I have to wear it even though it's uncomfortable and this and that. I'm sorry. I heard this from a tailor. Okay, he hates them because they design things which are good for that population, which isn't good for the general population, and it's frustrating. So I'm not trying to be insensitive here. It's just that it shouldn't be that guy is deciding what dictate what every person is wearing. It doesn't make sense, fashion. So I'm not trying, I'm not being insensitive, but you can't, it doesn't work that way. What happens if like, what would happen, there'd be an uproar if some really fat person decided he wants to be a fashion designer, and by default, he makes everything extremely large and baggy for the normal population, not for populations that like wearing baggy clothing. I don't even know if that's a style anymore. So there'd be uproar, who's this guy? Okay, but that's what's happening in the fashion industry, that some guy is deciding that they like really tight clothing, really short things and this and that, and that becomes the fashion. It's not fair for everyone else. just listen. Let's say if I said there are buttons here, but you couldn't undo the button because that's the fashion. Because I decided, because I'm a fashion designer from whatever populations wear their shirts like this. That's not fair. That's not. Why should he dictate that to me? Or if leaving my shirt totally open, that's not fair. Also, people should have free choice, not some person who's like has a fancy's name dictating things to people. That's all I'm saying. I'm not chas v'shalom to be insensitive to people of that community, but we just have to be like. Anyways, as long as it's not a Hasidic guy, then Hasidim get blamed for everything. You know, who started COVID? The Hasidim, obviously. I'm just saying, it's like, stop and think sometimes. That's the message of this, is stop and think. Don't let the world and trends dictate things to, like, your life. It doesn't even make sense. Bono shalom. Ask your great-grandmother if she would have bought ripped jeans from the store. Oh, goodness. The world is out of control. Anyways. Bar Prague, Mishnah Yud Bet. Oh, sorry. So what does this have to do with the Rudinsky? I don't know if we're going to be able to finish a parrot. But he said, because something uninterrupted, he cannot compare uninterrupted, 12 months of uninterrupted learning to, 2 months a year, like, you know, 5 months, month to learn, 5 months, a month to learn. It's just not the same. And that's one thing that Rudinsky Shlita was saying about COVID, is that we have to, like, take away from this is, like, what life is like without uninterrupted, like, disruption. I mean, for many people, life was very disrupted, but to, like, be able to zone in and to, like, stop and, like, everything, like, be with your family uninterrupted without having to run here, run there, run there, run there, run there, run there. You can't compare. I hope some people have been zochet to taste what uninterrupted life means. And why is Shabbos so good? It's uninterrupted. Uninterrupted every day of the week, and even non-Jews are advocate for a digital Sabbath. A digital Sabbath, a day without it's called digital Sabbath, a day without our smartphones, our devices. Just to be uninterrupted, to be there. And one thing which I think, which really came out is that I don't think you'll find one person who actually enjoyed, like, extended usage of Zoom. You know, anyone frustrated by Zoom, or it's, like, annoying? Okay, everyone. I think all of Urbana are, like, burnt out with Gamre. And everyone's zoomed out. Like, everyone in the world is zoomed out. That's, like, there are memes going on about Zoom. And I think what that shows us is that, like, really we need to have a face-to-face, person-to-person relationship, and that cannot be replaced by a screen. It cannot be replicated. It cannot be duplicated. A screen cannot replace that, and that's one of the frustrations, that we're hardwired to have a face-to-face relationship. In fact, studies have shown that when we have a face-to-face relationship, and someone's expressing their, like, pain and happiness, so the parts of our brain where if we were experiencing those light up. But that doesn't happen when we're on a screen, and that's Pshat or Chaim from Love. It says that. How did Moshe Rabbeinu become so great? Is that he went out of the palace and he saw the suffering of the Jewish people. By able to seeing that, so he had that sensation in his whatever prefrontal cortex to light up, or whatever area of the brain is that lights up. And he was able to experience it and feel that and connect to them. And then he goes on for greatness. And the same with us. If we want to have something true and lasting and real, so we need to have that face-to-face, in-person relationship, which already, like, this generation is like, technology has killed us. But one thing we should take from this COVID Zoom era is that we need it, and we can't, like, live like this. And, like, the truth is that we really need that face-to-face interaction. And as normal as it's become to do everything via, you know, FaceTime and cell phones, whatever it is, and smartphones and technologies, that at the core, what's been revealed is that in the core of a human being today is that we're still a human being. We have to be a human being, and we cannot let technology ruin that or replace that or try to duplicate that in a fake but real way, or real but really fake way. So I think that's one thing to look upon, And to reflect is to realize how much we really need that, how much we need our friends, how much we need our, you know, maybe we've experienced with our family. Maybe some people like experience it too much with their family. Now they like need a break from their family. That's normal. As one of my wife's friends said to her, she's like, daven for me that I shouldn't shoot my parents this Shabbos. So, well, it could be bad, but you know, too much of anything is not healthy. It has to be in moderation, as we mentioned once before. But that's one thing we should walk away. So uninterrupted learning for 12 months of the Shnas HaShmita cannot be compared to 12 years, 12 separate months split up between 6 years. And again, in life, the message of life is to do things and to be fully into it and invested. If right now I'm learning, I'm learning. I'm not being distracted by talking with my friends, not being distracted by my cell phones. Right now I'm learning. Doesn't mean you have to learn for 2 hours straight. But right now, just say, I'm going to take 15 minutes where I'm going to be totally, my head's in the book, and I'm not thinking about anything else, and nothing else is going to distract me. And then I'll take a 5-minute break to schmooze with my friends. But if you have 20 minutes and it's interspersed with schmoozing with your friends, it's not going to be compared to 15 minutes of learning and 5 minutes of just schmoozing. And that's what you should do. And when I'm studying for whatever degree I'm doing, so I should be studying fully and not being disturbed by it. And I shouldn't be taking out, when I'm in the middle of studying for my math test, taking out a safer and learning. Study for your math test, and then when you're done, take out a safer and learn. If you need a break in the middle, fine, but don't have this constant interruption, because we see that it has a really negative effect, and it ruins things. So that's one thing, the message to take from COVID, and that's the message to take from Shnas HaShmita, and that's the message we should try to remember for the rest of our lives. Shabbat Shalom. See you tomorrow, Bezrat HaShem.